Hey everybody, welcome to another edition of the Orange and Brown Talk podcast. I am Dan Lobby, and joining me via the phone is Mary Kay Cabot. Mary Kay, you are not in an airport today. You are back in Northeast Ohio.
Yes, I am home from LA. That was the last trip that I was just on. And Dan, I just picked the wrong weekend to go to LA.
Yeah, you did. Well, LeBron decided to join you there, not just for vacation. It's his new place of employment. So maybe this is your fault, Mary Kay.
It could be. You know, I will never forget where I was when LeBron made decision three. We were both out in LA. And it was funny because I had Uber drivers and people saying, oh, yeah, he's got a place over there. Or, yeah, he's probably over here at the Waldorf Astoria. And it was funny because we were kind of, keeping an eye open to see if we could find LeBron James somewhere in L.A. while we were there making this big decision.
Well, he's been laying pretty low. But honestly, if anybody would have been able to find him, I probably would have put my money on you.
I tried. I gave it the old college try.
All right. Well, today what we're going to do, and we're recording this here on July 4th, what we're going to do is we put some calls out for reader questions, listener questions, and we're going to go through 10 questions that we got either through Twitter or on the site 10 Browns Questions. So it covers a whole bunch of different things. We're going to start in familiar territory, though. The first question, it comes from a commenter named Shifty, and he gave us a few of these, but his first question is, will Tyrod Taylor have the best season of his career? And I thought that was an interesting question because I think there's a chance that maybe statistically he could.
Yeah, you know what? He probably could, because I think he has more talent around him than he ever did in Buffalo. I think that they're supporting him with a good defense and a good running game. And I do think that even though he has a Pro Bowl season under his belt, and he also has a season where he took the Bills to the playoffs last year, snapping their 17-year drought, I do think that statistically this could be a very, very good season for him, providing that some of these receivers stick around on the field and produce the way that we all think they will, including Josh Gordon, including an Antonio Callaway.
Yeah, I'm looking it up. I would say his best season was probably his first in Buffalo. That was his Pro Bowl year. 63% completion percentage, 3,000 yards, 3,035 passing yards, 20 touchdowns, 6 interceptions. And then, of course, you always have to look at the rushing yards, 568 rushing yards. It wasn't his biggest rushing year, but that was probably – his best season. The next year after wasn't bad either. Last year was a little bit of a step back, but still a strong year.
Yeah, I mean, those are some really fantastic statistics. And I think the Browns would be thrilled with a touchdown to interception ratio anywhere close to that. Because as we know, Dan, as you're looking at those statistics, we know that DeShone Kizer had more interceptions just last year, probably by far, I think by 6, than Tyrod Taylor had in his 4 years as a starter in Buffalo.
Yeah, and I think the weapons thing that you mentioned is really important because he never had a receiver like Josh Gordon. He had Sammy Watkins kind of – he was never really healthy his whole time there. I know he had the one – I think he had the one big year in Buffalo, but that was about it from him. And, he had LeSean McCoy out of the backfield, had some good tight ends, but hasn't had the receivers he's had here. And I think that's why you look at it and say, okay, there's a chance that maybe, at least statistically speaking, he could have a big year.
Yeah, and not only that, I mean, he also has Todd Haley, who is, obviously an accomplished offensive coordinator, calling the plays for him. And I think that he really will play to Tyrod Taylor's strengths, and that's what he's going to have to do. He's going to have to kind of get out of his comfort zone a little bit and call the read option stuff and some of the things that Tyrod is going to do very well. And if that all comes together, and again, it's a new offense for everyone. So Tyrod and everyone else on this offense, they're learning a whole new terminology, Todd Haley's scheme and all of that. So it might not be a well-oiled machine right from the very start, but I do think that all the ingredients are there for a good offensive season.
Okay, that is question number one. So let's move on to question number two, sort of along the same vein. This one comes from a commenter as well, John Boy Walton. He says, who do you believe is going to be the Browns' breakout player of this year, including rookies? He just wants to know who could be a standout player, so to speak, someone to keep an eye on. A breakout player, we mentioned Tyrod Taylor maybe having a big year. Trying to think, who else could really have a breakout year this year?
Well, you know, I think that there's a chance that Denzel Ward could have a breakout year if he gets on that field and lives up to expectations and is maybe able to also to get his hands on some interceptions. I think that could be considered a breakout year. I think you could look at a Nick Chubb and think that there's a chance that that he could have a breakout year just based on what we've seen him do in OTAs and minicamp. I mean, he just looks like he's ready to, again, run through a wall. So I think those are some guys that you think, I mean, I don't think we would really, you can't put necessarily a Jarvis Landry or a Josh Gordon in that category because they've already had their breakout years. So I would probably tend more towards one of those younger guys.
Yeah, maybe a Myles Garrett, as you were going through those names, that was somebody that popped in my head. Could Myles Garrett, you know, stay healthy for 16 games and have the type of year you'd expect a pass rusher taking number one overall to have?
Yeah, and you know, that's a good one, Dan, because I think that even though if you look at his statistics from last year and you see that he had 7 sacks in 11 games, that's pretty good. And I think most people would be pretty thrilled with that for a rookie and for his sack production. But he wasn't happy with it, and I don't really think the Browns were as happy with it as they wanted to be either. He went through a sort of midseason slump there where he had, I think, 1 sack in about 6 games. And they don't want that kind of a dry spell. They want him to be consistent throughout the season. So I think that he needs to get into double-digit sacks this season. And if he does that and is consistent all the way through and makes big plays too, including, you know, sack fumbles and those sorts of things, then I think you could consider that to be a breakout year for him.
Okay, let's move on to question number three. And this is kind of two different questions because we got two questions about this guy and this position. So we've talked about Denzel Ward pretty extensively on this podcast and his rise to the first team. It appears he's on the fast track to being the number one corner in this group. So one question came in, what's up with EJ Gaines? Haven't heard a word about him. If he stays healthy, he has the best defensive back talent, should become the starter opposite Ward. And then another question was, you know, we hear nearly nothing on the development and designated starter for the number two cornerback. What have we seen in regards to EJ Gaines versus TJ Carey, and also Brian Body Calhoun and his role? So I'll answer that last part first. I would probably pencil Body Calhoun in as probably an option at nickel and kind of an option as well, maybe at free safety. But it has been interesting to see, you know, Greg Williams has kind of mixed it up opposite of Denzel Ward. We saw Gaines kind of there early. Terrence Mitchell has played a little bit there. We've seen TJ Carey there. I'm not sure if there's really an answer to that as far as who the number two cornerback is yet.
Yeah, you know, it's still somewhat up for grabs a little bit, but I think that it seems to me that TJ Carey is the front runner, and I've seen him there more so than anybody with the ones in minicamp, so at least in addition to towards the end of the minicamp. So I think that when they open camp, I don't know, I just have a feeling that TJ Carey will be there opposite Denzel Ward. And it's an opportunity for EJ Gaines to, you know, to step it up and prove that he deserves that job. And I think that they have some opportunities there. We've talked about this many times with the versatility of all those guys in the defensive backfield to move some guys around. But I think EJ and TJ Carey will probably have a pretty good battle going in training camp.
Yeah, and, you know, it's going to be a situation where we love to talk about versatility, but most teams have their top two corners on the field for most of the game. They don't really rotate those guys out a whole lot. Maybe that changes if you have enough talent, but, you know, I'm intrigued by Gaines. I think he's got a chance to be really good, but health is an issue with him.
Yeah, it definitely is. And like you said, most of the time you have two starting cornerbacks and you keep them in there throughout the game. But they play in so many sub defenses now, and you're playing against three wides so often that you need extra defensive backs on the field, and that's where the versatility is going to come in, because you can mix and match a lot of these guys in so many different ways. And like you mentioned, Body Calhoun can play in the nickel. Some guys can play, like you said, free safety and cornerback. You know, we've got Demaryius Randall who can do that. So I think that they will get the best defensive backs on the field in those sub defenses when you're going to have at least five of them out there.
Okay, let's stick with the defensive back theme. Someone asking about Jabril Peppers, and we saw last year, this is Raul Havana, a commenter, if Jabril Peppers struggled reading plays from 30 yards off the line of scrimmage when he took bad angles and things like that, why would it be different if he's closer to the line of scrimmage? So basically asking, you know, how can we trust that Jabril Peppers is going to be able to make the adjustments he needs to make from what we saw last year to this year?
Well, I think that's one of the reasons why that Derek Kindred is still pushing him for that job. I mean, Jabril is going to have to come and take that job away from Derek Kindred, because Derek has a little bit more experience in the league, and he's a good football player and they like him. And I think that Jabril is still learning a new position. And I think that not only will he's working at strong safety and free safety, because he has some experience doing that last year. And I don't think that they're handing him this job. He's going to have to step up and prove that he can do it. I think the thing that makes strong safety better for him, and there are a number of things, but one of those things is the fact that he's a big hitter. And I think that this will give him an opportunity to use his big hitting skills and be more of an enforcer back there. And also, you know, maybe get his hands on some passes and intercept some balls as well. But he's going to have to earn this job.
Yeah, and he had an interception in that last game against Pittsburgh. And, you know, guess where he was playing? He was playing up near the line. And I think maybe it's a little bit of a comfort level thing too. You know, getting back to where he's used to playing, having a little more freedom to kind of be aggressive and go get the quarterback, you know, go try and hit some running backs. And honestly, I think taking an angle from 30 yards away and having to read that play is harder than if you've got to read where a running back is going.
Yeah, and in the scheme that they play, I mean, he played that deep, deep angel position way, way back there. So I think it is easy to, you know, to take a bad angle and look, you know, kind of bad at times coming from that position. Not everybody plays their safety quite that deep, but these guys were intent on not letting balls go over their head. And I think statistically they accomplished that, but now, you know, they need to take it to the next level, of course. But that was, you know, that was a challenging position for him to play. And, you know, now he's got some responsibilities I think he's more suited for, and it's up to him to go out and grab it. And I think in the same way that Myles Garrett needs to step it up and have a big jump from year one to year two, I think Jabril needs to do the same thing.
Okay, let's switch sides of the football here, and let's talk a little bit about the offense. So we know about this offensive coaching staff. You've got Todd Haley, Al Saunders is still involved, Freddie Kitchens, Ken Zampezi. You know, these are guys that have been around successful offenses and been a part of successful offenses. So this question, it says, it really sounds like a solid staff for putting points on the board. That being said, what do you think this team could average per game? What's a realistic mark? This person threw out 25 points per game. That seems a little bit high, but what's a realistic mark for this team?
Well, I think if you want to be winning football games, you have to be up in the 24, 25 range. You've got
to be
up there, or you're just not going to win football games like that. So, you know, especially in today's NFL with the emphasis on the high-flying passing games and teams being able to get downfield and score in a hurry, I think you've got to be up in the 24. Do you have this statistic around, Dan, for what they averaged last year? I know it was
I'm actually
horrible.
Pulling it up right now. It was 14. This is from Pro Football Reference. 14.6 points per game last year. And then the year before, it was 16.5. And then the year before that, it was 17.4. So this team has been stuck in the team
it's been
for
bad.
A long time.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been bad for a long, long time. And that's why there has been this increased emphasis, obviously, on bringing a winning experienced quarterback in here, in upgrading the receiving core, in bringing running backs in here. This is a different offense. It's got a new offensive coordinator. It's just a new day in terms of Cleveland Browns offense, and I don't think they're going to score only 14 points a game this year.
I keep hitting this previous season button on Pro Football Reference. I'm trying to find the last time this team averaged 20 points a game. I'm all the way back to 2009, and I still haven't found it. I might have to go all the way back to 2007. There was one year where they came close. They were at 19. But 2007, they averaged 25 a game. And I don't see another year where they got over 20 per game.
Yeah, it's been a long, long drought. And I think that points to the quarterback woes that this team has had all of these years. I mean, I remember back when Colt McCoy was trying to win games back in the day. I think they were in the 18s back then. It's been a long time since they have had an NFL-worthy offense to trot out there, and it's about time, and I think that this will be completely different football to watch.
Okay, so let's look at the receivers, because there was a question about the receivers and how many guys might end up making the final roster. That's always a hard thing to kind of guess right now. But we're looking at, of course, Josh Gordon, of course, Jarvis Landry, Corey Coleman, assuming, we'll maybe get to that name a little later, but assuming he's still, around, is going to make that roster. But there's some other guys. Antonio Callaway will make it. There's not a lot of room for guys like Rashard Higgins, Jeff Janis, guys like that, Ricardo Lewis. The squeeze is going to get tight. Do you think a guy like Rashard Higgins or Ricardo Lewis could end up kind of getting squeezed off this roster?
Possibly. And, they also drafted Damian Ratley.
Oh,
and
yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I think he has some potential too. And when you draft a guy, especially when a new regime comes in and they draft players, those guys are going to get the advantage over the previous regime's drafted players. That's just how this business works. So if it comes down to Damian Ratley or Rashard Higgins or Damian Ratley and Ricardo Lewis, you know who's going to win that battle, okay? They're not going to cut a draft pick from their first year. So as long as he demonstrates good potential, now, of course, some of these guys can end up on the practice squad too, but as long as Damian Ratley demonstrates that, that he's got good potential, he will trump one of those other guys that was drafted by Sashi Brown. We've already seen that that John Dorsey doesn't necessarily love the roster that he inherited, and he doesn't think very highly of some of the players that Sashi Brown drafted. So I think some of those guys have that strike against them when you're talking about Ricardo, Rashard, those guys. I will say this. There's something about Rashard Higgins that I've always liked. And I thought he had a very nice mini camp, OTAs. And I think if anyone survived from that last tier, that last group of guys, or any of those Sashi Brown people, I think it would be Rashard. I think there's something there worth salvaging.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, because I'm kind of with you. I saw him make some plays in the spring. I saw him make some catches. And look, John Dorsey was around when he had that game in Pittsburgh where he scored the two touchdowns. John Dorsey was at that game, sitting right behind us watching. So he's seen Rashard Higgins, even though he has been inconsistent. He's seen him perform, so maybe that'll help him.
Yeah, he hasn't had a lot of opportunities. I mean, he hasn't really had too many chances to have the reps and all those sorts of things and to really play all that much. But I think when he has, he's made the most of his opportunities, and I think he's a receiver worth developing.
Another part of this question had to do with the return duties, because Jeff Janis was brought up. And the assumption that this person made was that Jeff Janis and Jabril Peppers would handle return duties, but I don't know that that's really written in stone. I mean, that might be the way, Antonio Callaway is going to make the roster, but that might be the way he gets on the field.
Yeah, and you and I have talked about Jeff Janis a little bit before. He comes from Green Bay, and so the personnel guys obviously like him and see something in him they drafted him, and they brought him here. So he's another one of those guys that will have a chance to make the football team by virtue of what the front office, what the personnel guys believe he is capable of doing. So he's somebody to keep an eye on. But when you look at his production since he's been in the NFL, the production really isn't there. So in my mind, like, how is he going to make this football team? It looks like it's going to be very difficult to me, but you always have to factor in, you know, who brought him here and what they had in mind when they acquired him.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a good problem for this team to have, and it's one that they haven't really had in the past, where they have, you know, almost too many receivers. And we know that that can change, you know, an injury here or there, that can change those numbers dramatically. But for right now, to have to pick and choose between guys and maybe have to send a good player packing because you have too many, that's not a bad thing.
Yeah, they needed to arrive at that point. And there are certain positions where there are actually a surplus of talented players, and it's about time.
So you mentioned Sashi Brown, and of course we love to talk about Sashi Brown on this podcast. Toronto Mike in the comments brought up Sashi. And he asks, you know, what is the true impact of Sashi Brown and his plan as it pertains to the Browns today? You know, are we still kind of trying to build whatever his legacy was? Is that in the past? That's kind of what he's getting at with this question. How does Sashi Brown and what he decided to undertake a couple years ago play into where the Browns are right now?
Well, the legacy of Sashi Brown won't be fully realized for another probably 3, 4, 5 years. And it will be determined by how Carson Wentz plays in Philadelphia. Does he take them to a couple of more Super Bowls? I mean, he's already had a tremendous, obviously, impact on the Eagles. But it's also what happens now with the Cleveland Browns. Did they use these picks to turn into a championship football team? And did they get it right? And did Sashi sort of set them up and pave the way for them to do this? Now, and even then, there will be plenty of debate over the impact that he had on it in the end, because, you know, he didn't end up drafting these guys from this year. So if Baker Mayfield has tremendous success, then I think, you know, that goes on John Dorsey's positive side of the ledger more so than anything that Sashi Brown did. So the legacy, we won't know for 3 or 4 more years, and it will all depend on how the Sashi Brown guys pan out here. I mean, we've already got, you know, Corey Coleman that we don't know how he's going to do, and most of the other guys that came in that Carson Wentz trade have not really done all that much yet to justify that trade.
Yeah, there's I think that nails it. We just don't know. You know, even though his time is complete, you know, he stockpiled all these assets for 2018 and didn't get to use them. He passed on Carson Wentz. He passed on Deshaun Watson. You know, I think maybe his front office would have seriously considered a guy like Baker Mayfield, because he kind of was an analytics darling coming into the draft. So I mean, that's kind of an interesting dynamic in all of this. It puts a little bit of pressure on Baker to kind of, you know, you passed on 2 classes worth of quarterbacks so you could get one of these guys. You know, if none of these guys are worth anything, and Carson Wentz and Deshaun Watson keep going up, that's going to be a black mark on his legacy.
Yeah, I think in the end, if this team, this current team, goes on to win a Super Bowl within a couple of years, then I think Sashi Brown deserves some credit for that, for acquiring all these assets and for acquiring all the money that it took, you know, to sign some of these players that they've signed. I think he will deserve an asterisk for some of that. But it just all depends on if this team lands in the Super Bowl and wins one in the next 3 years.
Yeah, exactly. I think go ahead.
Right, Dan, because you're holding that up against Carson Wentz taking the he didn't finish it off, but Carson Wentz leading the Eagles to a Super Bowl. That's the standard you have to set the Sashi Brown regime by, is them winning that Super Bowl with Carson Wentz.
Yeah, and you know, I think it's fair. Like, let's say this team goes out and wins 7-8 games this year, makes the playoffs next year, and has a couple good runs and some of his picks and maybe some picks that came from some of those trades are a big part of it. I think it's perfectly fair to still give Sashi a little credit for what he did, because, you know, that his plan was to really sort of, you know, his plan was focused on this draft because of all the assets he put into it. So I think he's always going to be sort of a part of this story.
Oh, he'll definitely always be part of this story. And it's just a matter of you know, your viewpoint or your vantage point on how you want to shape it, spin it, talk about it. But I think ultimately, in the end, that, you know, that he will deserve some credit for, you know, for acquiring all of the assets that he did. And we've said this many, many times before that, you know, we didn't think, or at least I didn't think, that he was the right person to be acquiring all the players and drafting all the players. And I think that he'd still be here today if, when he set up his front office and regime, if he just would have hired a really good, accomplished, experienced general manager who had assembled a winning roster. I think there was just that missing tier. And lo and behold, it just didn't work out. And now here we are. So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, and this is a discussion for another day, but I also wonder, you know, part of me wonders what would have happened if maybe the structure were built where he would have been that team president to hire the coach and hire a GM and all of that. That would have been – that's a discussion for another day, or maybe we'll just pass on it altogether. this is one from Twitter. Someone replied to you, Patrick McGraw. He wants to know if there's anyone that you're looking at on this roster – that you're kind of keeping an eye on as maybe getting traded before this season starts?
Well, I suppose there could be some trades. We've seen that John Dorsey is absolutely 100% willing to trade away veterans on this football team. And I think it's already up to 6. And the one person that I would probably look at, and we've talked about this a number of times before, would be Corey Coleman. I don't think that this team really believes in Corey Coleman. And if they are going to start believing in Corey Coleman, he's going to have to step it up this year. Everyone has been very vocal about this, that this is prove it time for him, that he's got to show them that he's worthy of that 2016 number 15 overall pick. If he can't do that this year, then I don't think he'll last beyond this year. And I do think that if someone were willing to offer them something decent for Corey Coleman, that they would be willing to move him.
Yeah, this is an enormous year for Coleman. He's kind of the one I keep coming back to. And, you know, look, it would certainly be a controversial move if they decided to trade him. I do think there's talent there. I do think there's something there with Corey Coleman. I think we've seen flashes of it when he's been healthy. I think he suffered a little bit from the bad quarterback play over the last year. I think there's something there. He's got to toughen up a little bit. He's got to be able to make big plays out of nothing sometimes. I'll be honest, I'd be a little leery about giving up on a guy like Corey Coleman. But yeah, I mean, if you could get, if they don't believe in him and they get a second round pick maybe or something like that, you'd have to consider it.
Well, the other thing about Corey Coleman is he never really had anybody to show him the way. He needed a mentor, right? I mean, he was the classic, I need a mentor kind of guy that would show him how to prepare, how to study, how to watch film, and everything else that you have to do to be a great receiver in the NFL. He never really had that. So if he can prepare the way that he needs to and couple that with the talent that he has, we have seen flashes of it. We've definitely seen flashes of that. But again, he's overcoming a lot of things, including the fact that he was the first pick of Sashi Brown, and you know, and that really doesn't help his cause. He is the first Sashi Brown pick, the first round pick that came after they traded away Carson Wentz, whom the coaches wanted, and so he, you know, that's just another strike against him.
All right, here's a random question. The day after Joe Thomas Day, we will talk about maybe the player who got the greatest Joe Thomas nickname ever, the Pierogi Prince of Parma. I can't find where I wrote it down, but I do know somebody asked. So the question was basically, what's going on with Jamie Meter? We haven't heard a lot about him. Well, what I can say is I saw him working a little bit with the first team during the spring. I don't see any sort of role change for him. He's probably, you know, fighting for a job on the inside. I don't know that a roster spot is guaranteed, but, you know, I don't think anything has really changed with Meter necessarily from what we've seen the last couple of years.
No, you know, I think they look at him as a really good role player, and he, I can't remember the exact quote right now, but Greg Williams gave him a pretty high compliment when we talked to him at minicamp. I'd have to go back and look up that quote, but he, you know, he said some good things about his ability. He called him the best at something. And I can't remember exactly what it was. It was a very specific thing.
I'm going to find it.
Yeah. See if you can find it. And so that said to me that they think highly of him and that he will be in there. Obviously they don't have Danny Shelton anymore. So they're looking for guys in that middle that can, you know, just take up some space there and help stop the run. And I think they really believe that Jamie Meter can be one of those guys. So he will be part of the rotation there. I don't know if he'll have a starting job. He might. We have seen him work with the ones in minicamp, but I definitely think he will be part of the rotation.
Yeah, so the guys they have there and the guys mentioned in this answer are, of course, Larry Ogunjobi, Trevon Coley, Caleb Brantley, who, frankly, we don't really ever talk about, but he had some flashes here and there last year. And then here's what he said about Jamie Meter. Jamie Meter, probably one of the best run players in the National Football League. So that's sees him as strong against the run, and that's certainly something the Browns value.
Yeah, and again, I thought it was a little bit more specific than that, but
maybe it was something different.
Yeah, but that's still pretty high praise. I mean, if you're one of the better run stoppers in the NFL, you're going to make this football team.
All right, so last question here, and this is one that really neither of us are qualified to answer, but we're going to do it anyway. So Maurean Williams tweeted you, and I'm not sure if they were being serious or what, but we're going to answer it. Who do you want to win the World Cup? I'll be honest, I have not watched as much World Cup as I usually do. I usually kind of take it all in. I'm not a huge soccer person, but I do usually watch the World Cup. I've only kind of watched it off and on. I'm kind of in the England camp. I'd like to see them get it done. I don't know why. I don't have a good reason for it. But I think I'd like to see England win the World Cup.
Well, Dan, that's a good choice. I think it was interesting because I was actually in Barcelona while the World Cup was going on, and Spain was in the World Cup at that time. So it was kind of fun and exciting to be over there. It was going on, you know, it was on every single television in Barcelona, anywhere that we went. So it was kind of an exciting time to be there. Although it was funny because a lot of people in Barcelona, you know, just didn't love Spain for some reason. It was sort of a weird thing, but there's a lot going on in Barcelona in terms of, you know, Catalonia versus Spain and all different kinds of things. That's a history lesson for another day. But, and then I was in LA, and everyone was into the World Cup this past weekend in LA. And everywhere I went, everyone was cheering and excited and watching every moment of the World Cup. But because I was in France just a couple of weeks ago in Paris, and they are still in it, I'm going to go with France. And that's probably the only reason why.
Okay, so there you go. We managed to come up with a couple. Well, here's what's interesting. Because France and England are slated to meet in the final if they both win their next two games. They're on opposite sides of the bracket. So we're setting up like an orange and brown talk World Cup bragging rights match here.
Well, looking forward to it, Dan. And I, you know, I'm pretty confident that I'm going to kick your behind on this one.
Don't ask us to name any players on the teams we picked. That's the only rule here. All right. So that was 10 questions, I think, 10-ish questions that our listeners and readers submitted to us here over the last couple days. So we appreciate everyone getting a hold of us, asking us Browns questions. I'm not sure, Mary Kay, if we're going to be able to get one of these recorded next week because I'm actually going to be going out of town here for the next week or so. But if not, we'll be back in a couple weeks with a new Orange and Brown talk. And I think we'll have plenty to talk about because training camp will be right around the corner.
Yeah, 3 weeks away. We are almost there.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody.